Rangers Rambles.
We are live today with the next episode of the Furry Raiders podcast. My name is Jolt, chief host of the show, and joining me today, as usual, is our co-host, Avira.
Hey, everybody. It's me, the candy corn doggo.
And second of all, we have a special guest today joining us, and he is Cord Kitty. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Cord Kitty. I'm not a furry Raiders. I was just invited. Okay, I just wanted to say that first. But yes, hi, I'm a kitty. Meow, meow, meow. I was invited and I'm like, okay, this seems fine. Okay, let's do it.
It's all good, sweet. Though. We call in people when they've got quite a few interesting bits and bobs to say. That's why you're here.
Yes, many interesting bits and bobs indeed.
Oh, and I should also introduce my son. His name is Damien. He's a cab, but you'll probably hear him in the background. But he sometimes talks a little bit. Sometimes he'll just be a baby babble.
Wait a minute. He's a cat. So your wife is a bunny, and you're a cat, and you had a cat.
Well, a kitten. So kitten actually is the name of both a baby cat and a baby rabbit.
Is it really? I did not know that. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, good. Yeah. Good stuff.
He's my kitten. And when he grows up, he'll be a cabin. So there you go.
Nice.
Or he's going to resent his parents and the whole fandom. He'll be like, oh, God, my parents are into the furry things. They're so weird. Thank God I turned into a jock.
Well, all right.
And he'll grow up to beat up furries.
I'd hope so, though. But you know how it is with people.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I certainly am. I haven't been doing a lot of podcasting stuff lately because, I have my own podcast, the first greatest podcast in the world, but I haven't released any episode for a very long time because the software that I use to record it with is not functional anymore. And I have my baby, so I just don't have time to set up all the equipment with the computer. But hey, I might start doing my podcast on this thing. This thing seems awfully convenient.
It is. Yeah. All right, Cord. So would you like to start by talking a little bit about you? I mean, all your different hobbies, because I mean, you've done a lot in this fandom for many years, inside and outside as well. So if you want to just give a little rundown of some of the things that you're involved in.
Sure thing. I first found out about furry websites and stuff in 2001. And then I started joining fur meets and furry cons and stuff in 2008. And the stuff I do is, first I started to, I got the ears, got the tail, got all that stuff. And then in 2013, I saw my first fursuit dance competition and it was just a surreal experience. I'd never been exposed to, anything quite like that. And I really enjoyed it. What I did was I was like, oh man, I don't know how to dance very well. It'd be cool if I could dance just like that. Oh, well, and I just sort of fantasized myself doing fursuit dance competitions in my head for a year, and then finally I got an opportunity. I had somebody who was a fursuit maker who had a really good price, and then I joined my first fursuit dance competition. It was in New Jersey. It was the Joyzy. So this was the Furfinity United in 2014.
Wait a minute. Oh, dude. I was telling Jolt about this before. This is the one where you roomed with me at FAU, did you win that one?
I got second place. I was very lucky. I was shocked. Oh,
that's crazy.
For a first timer, that's actually.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And the craziest thing, like, I don't know anything about choreography at all. All I did is I went on the roof of my apartment in New York City, and I had a friend of mine make a mix. I just played that mix over and over, and then I just kind of like tried to figure something out, and it was incredible luck. I was very, very happy it turned out well. The guy who won was a Mosey, and Mosey has won at Anthrocon before. So yeah, Mosey's a very skilled dancer. He's, I think, the mate of Dancing Duke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. But now it's not just luck, though, because you've been in first place at least 7 different times. You've been in second place at least 3 times, and a top finalist over 30 times at like different conventions over the course of your whole experience. So it's really like, is it like, did you develop certain skills, or did you just be yourself? Like how does that really work? Did you develop choreography?
Well, basically, like, I do have some background in musical theater dance. Like, I did the children's theater show when I was 10 years old. Like, when I was 10, they had this. So it was the Jewish telling of the Jewish story of Esther. And I think that might also be in the Bible, too. But yeah, I was in part of my synagogue. I was a good little Jewish boy, and I played the part of Jew. Like, that was the name of the part. Jew.
Very, so, very, very part. Respectful and distinct. How will we ever
and then I just kept, I kept doing musicals, and I got really interested in music. And then I went through college, and I my major was music composition. So this really connects with everything. Like I did a lot of piano playing there. And then when I first got into dance, I kind of like visualized like that there was a piano around me. And I kind of thought like, okay, maybe like my hands are like keys playing at particular times. And that's kind of the philosophy I got kind of going into it. But I mean, if anyone's seen my performance, like if you're a professional dancer, you know that I'm just wiggling around up there, making stuff up on the spot most of the time.
You know, so
it works. Whatever you're doing, it works.
I mean, people do it a lot, you know, they do it frequently that they freestyle stuff and improvise, right? Like, that's kind of how most furry dance routines, I'm going to assume that's how most furry dance routines work. Is that a bad guess?
Well, let's see. Some people, they improvise. Some people, they don't improvise. Like, actually, like, so I've been keeping track of, like who's been getting all the, like, how many wins. And the one other furry who also has 7 wins is Atsu Fox. And he's a professional dancer. He has students. He is a very intricate choreographer. He is a great, great example of just an expert choreographer. So if you want to go to a really, really, really good dancer, check out Atsu Fox's dances. And that is an example of the opposite of me. Like he doesn't like always do improvisation at every time. Like I pretty much always do improvisation. He always does really, really good new style hip hop choreography. And it's really, it's good. It's good, but it's different. It is different. It looks a bit more planned.
Well, yours looks very planned as well, considering your background in theater. Like I've seen a lot of videos and of course, you know, you in person. Whenever there's a song playing, you like tell a story with it. You know, you're not just dancing randomly. Like you're actually moving with the music and doing something in sync with it, which is really interesting. And I mean, it does not look like it's not choreographed. Like, you know what I mean? Like it looks like you really did plan everything out, even if maybe you didn't.
And that all has to—that all has to do with just my mindset. I kind of like to think about purpose and like, all right, if I'm going to do a dance move, I want it to be connected to the lyrics. Like, I mean, it's really hard for me to dance to songs that don't have any lyrics. Like, I like telling a story. That's whatever. All connected musical theater style dance. And but yeah, no, absolutely. I want to have purposeful movement, and that's kind of what I do going into it.
Yeah, guys, I don't know if anyone has seen this, but you can type in on YouTube. He did a dance to Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. And like one of the songs from that show, he actually danced to it, which is pretty cool.
And like, I think that was for Apocalypse 2015. Oh, actually, no, you know what? I've done Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, I think 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. And it really does look like you're telling the story. Like, it's amazing.
Thank you. I'm just like, I love that I have a chance to like perform for others. Like, I've been sort of thinking about this for a while. If you really think about it, if you're an actual dancer, at what point could you actually show off your stuff like in front of an audience? Like, when do you have that opportunity? Like, when I used to live in New York City, when it came to like, you know, gigging and like playing piano or stuff, you literally had to pay to perform. You couldn't just go to an open mic. You had to pay to be on stage. And so like this opportunity of being able to show off amateur choreography and then getting meaningful feedback is unique to Fursuit dance competitions. I haven't found anything like that outside in the professional dancer world or anything like that. It's just incredibly unique, and it's really, I mean, to me, for when I go to a furry con, if it doesn't have a Fursuit dance competition, I will not go there. That's the best part of a con for me.
Yeah, it is very popular. It's a very popular event.
Yeah,
I'm all about creativity. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
That's okay. I was about to interject, but I mean, it's great you got the. That's so. I was about to say that is that kind of where you kind of started the whole improvising gig. Like, where do you get your inspiration from?
Well, I mean, like the first time, to be honest, when I grew up, like musical theater and all that stuff, like I hated dance. In fact, like what I did was I was like, I only did it because I loved acting and I loved singing. And it was a little bit of sibling rivalry because my sister did all this stuff. And I was like, oh, I want to see if I can do it better. So that's kind of a big motivation, I got to admit. I was very jealous of my sister's attention because she was great at everything. So when I got into it, I just hated dance. I liked the acting and singing part of musical theater, and I hated dance. I didn't like dance. I still don't really like, community theater chorus dancing. It's a little dull to me. But I didn't know about like hip hop dance. Like, I really didn't know much of anything about it. I had not been exposed to it very much. So when I saw the 2013, there's a particular dance style which Michael Jackson popularized very well, called popping, and I my first exposure to popping was the first dance competition. And when I saw that style, like I was especially my favorite dancer seeing it was a snapback. She had this incredible combination of these different advanced techniques called isolation, animation, popping and liquid, and it was all combined in it, and it's all popping style, and I was just like amazed with it. I just wanted to learn how to do it, and I didn't know anything about it, and I was just like, I just started faking it, and that's really how that's how you do it, really. You just fake it till you make it.
There's a lot of things in the real world.
We had a couple other questions about like your perspective on how these competitions are actually like run or organized. So, I mean, like for instance, let's say if you're competing against like some big names out there, like Taer, Telephone, Duke, Manguzu. And do you think like there's favoritism when it comes to judging, or like how exactly does that work? Or do you think in your experience, have the judges pretty been mostly non-biased?
I mean, you have to be, there's no way to be objective when you're judging a subjective art form. And like, think about it, like best film, best dance, that's an oxymoron because best is a, objective term, but film, that's not objective. You can never be objective about a film. Every single person in the world has a slightly different opinion about every film, every dance. It is just by nature subjective. So, of course, yes, all judges are biased, but I very much trust in the judges who are dancers themselves, and who like JD Puppy. He has a background in competitive ballroom dancing. That's perfect. That's great. He's absolutely qualified to judge. Usually when you go to small cons, they'll do the guest of honor, or they'll do just some random person who was around at the time. And sometimes there are people who might not really know much about dancing. They're just there at the time, but that's okay. I mean, that's just what ritualistically happens at all the small cons. They'll take non-dancers to judge dancers, and that's okay. But I think the way how you get the best, I think, I mean, again, you need dancers to judge dancers. That's my point. I mean, I think right, to be really fair, because if you're not a dancer, you know what you're naturally going to do? You're going to choose the cutest fursuit. That's what you're naturally going to do.
The most popular. Yeah. Or the most famous or something. Cause like, and that's a good point you bring up. You know, I don't think it's necessarily all that subjective. I mean, it is to an extent, but if you are a professional dancer and like, you know, if like, okay, let's say somebody gets up on stage and they just like move their arms and they just stand there and they're boring. Objectively, that's not competitive. That's not entertaining. So there are certain standards, you know, to be, I guess, measured, even albeit measured in a subjective manner. But let's say if I go up against like you or telephone and I blow you out of the water, which by the way would never happen. But like, let's just say if it did, and they still chose the more popular one. Like, have you ever seen that happen?
Let's see, off the top of my head, like I've seen people win who was like, wait, why did they win? But in the end, it really doesn't matter who wins, because it's not about winning. They're not on stage to win. Like, that's the difference between fursuit dance competitions and So You Think You Could Dance. So You Think You Could Dance, or it's like about like the cash prize and winning and stuff. But with fursuit dance competitions, winning is not the primary objective. That's like who goes to fursuit games and like the number one thing they're thinking about is winning. That's people don't do fursuit games for the winning, do they?
Oh yeah. Oh totally. Absolutely. I'm just kidding. But I mean, my team did win the Furpocalypse fursuit games, by the way, just so you know. Green team, shout out. Okay, sorry. But no, yeah, you're right. It really is all about fun. It's just really interesting how, you know, because there are winners in these things, and I just wanted to know how that all works. So it's really interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's a very different judging system with each one, or like with Califur, when I judged that, they changed the judging standards the day, like actually just 10 minutes before they decided to change the way the judging criteria, they changed it. Like, I was like, oh, Califur.
Oof.
No.
But that was the worst judging experience I've ever had. But it's also the best, because it's the only one I've ever had. But
okay.
I like competing. I like competing and dancing, and you know, and even if I don't make it in, like the thing is, the competition is so much fiercer now. Like you really can't get by just improvising if you're auditioning for Anthrocon or BLFC anymore. Now like you have to have like all the choreography boom learnt, and it's got to be pretty poppin', pretty dope. So now things are getting a lot more competitive. The fandom's getting much bigger. So, you know, out of the woodworks, the professionals, semi-professionals are coming out, and they're, you know, they're blowing everyone out of the water pretty much. But to be honest,
yeah, they even have groups too.
It's still fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still all a lot of fun. Like, I mean, like I know some people who are fursuit dancers who are also, you know, professional dancers, teachers, who have been on World of Dance, who have been on, you know, been on bigger stages outside of the fandom. So, you know, there's a big mix of people who, I mean, when you go to maybe a smaller con, you'll see people who have never danced in their whole life, and you'll see other people who have danced their whole life. And it's cool. It's fine. I mean, like, I'm really kind of, I get a little ticked off when I see people commenting on my YouTube channel about, this dancer sucks. And you look on their channel, and what do they have? They have like two Let's Plays with 5 views. It's like, come on. You're not even dancing.
Yeah, right? Who are you?
It's like, oh, look at that guy on stage. What a moron. It's like, you're not on stage. You're the one sitting down watching the guy on stage. So already they're a better dancer than you. You know what I mean? Like, if you think someone's a bad dancer, great. Prove that you're better. Like, I'm just so sick of all the hate comments I get on my YouTube channel. It's disgusting how many lazy people who just do Let's Plays don't know how to dance, and then they think they have the right to criticize. Like, no, they don't.
If it's not the quality of the dancing that's basically prejudicing, it's probably the suit. But I digress.
But yeah, as you see, I'm very passionate about it. But that's because I'm a little obsessed. I'm a little obsessed with fursuit dancing.
No, that's awesome. I mean, you've been to what, like over at least like 50 cons, maybe like 70.
Yeah, about 51. Yeah, I think 50, 51.
50. Yeah, 50. That's insane.
I mean, we kind of talked about this too a little bit, but now that since you've basically gone over trying to hit up everyone in the States and Canada, right? Wasn't that one?
It was one of those things where I found this. So I don't want to advertise for these people, but Megabus, I was able to get from New York City to Texas and back again for $47 total.
Oh, that's how you did it. Oh my goodness.
It's the Megabus, because they have these $1 deals where they'll take you from Chicago to Texas for $1, and then it's and those deals are all over the place with Megabus.
Wow.
Must have been all a right. Pretty long trip though.
So yeah, I tried to hit up all the cons I could find that were and most of the really big furry cons, they're near the big cities and they were near Megabus stops. In fact, Anthrocon, their main convention hall is a Megabus stop. So to me, that's the cheapest way to travel. You want to avoid Greyhound. Greyhound's the worst. I lost my fursuit on Greyhound. If you see all the videos of me, my fursuit, yeah, that was stolen off of a Greyhound.
You mean the Cheshire Cat?
Yeah, the bodysuit of the Cheshire Cat that was stolen.
Now you're like, would you still partial?
But on the Megabus, I did a billion times, never got anything stolen.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I remember, I think when we were rooming together, like 4 or 5 years ago at FAU, you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to another convention like in 3 days. And it was Sunday. I'm like, what are you talking about in 3 days? And you're like, yeah, I'm just going to go across the country. And I'm like, how? What are you doing? And that was my second or third con ever. And I wasn't even thinking about going to another one because, it was a lot of money and whatnot to travel. But I was just like, what? And you're like, oh, yeah, and then I'm going to go hit up this and this and this. And you're talking about going to 20 cons over the course of 6 months. And I'm like, what in the heck? It was crazy.
Well, not 20 cons over 1 year. So what I ended up doing.
Well, maybe not 6 months. I was exaggerating, but.
So 2015 was a very special year for me because I decided hey, let's do this bucket list thing. Let's see how many cons I could go to in 1 year. And I had the money. I got a really good amount of money from, I was a background actor for The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And I worked. And even though I only ended up on 3 frames as kind of a dark silhouette, even though that happened,
I got a lot of extra money.
And I was able to go to 22 furry cons all in just 1 year. So what ended up happening was, I think maybe three times during the year, I went to 4 cons over the span of 1 month. So that's probably what you witnessed.
Yeah. I think that's what we were talking about. Because I don't remember what year it was but I do remember you talking about that, and I was just mind blown. I'm like, how? That seems impossible. But yeah, so that's another thing we wanted to talk about too.
Yeah.
Dance competitions, you've been in a lot of different movies and commercials and background stuff, craziness.
I was about to basically pop in and say let's just go climb through the Amazing Spider-Man for those 3 frames to find Cord.
You don't have to. You just go to my wiki fur, which I wrote. Yes, I wrote my own wiki fur. So you go to my wiki fur, and then you go to the videography section. I put up a screen cap of everything I could find.
Pro tip: if you basically piss off the wiki fur mods, they'll lock you out of editing your own page, just like they did out of Foxler's.
Oh dear!
Wait,
that's total control.
His own page?
Well, Foxler's a troublemaker. That doesn't count.
No, he's a Nazi. That's the problem.
Ah well. Well, I mean, but to get back on track though, I've been told about your impressive record of appearing of movies. There's got to be a story to how you get in, right?
Sure, I'll tell you. I wish I could say what his name was. I forgot his name, but there was a fellow student who I met in a musical theater class back in 2009 in college, and he did background acting for some film. He said he made $300 in San Francisco, and I was like, that sounds like the coolest thing ever. Whoa. And I think I was just sort of in a daze, wow, I know somebody who is in a movie. Whoa. And I kept in touch with them and I still had that bug. I really wanted to do that. And then once I moved to New York City, I moved to Queens. I moved with a furry named TDK, and we lived in Queens for about 3 months. And then I found out that, And then I looked on Craigslist, and then there was this one volunteer gig, which was a it was volunteer background acting. And I met this one dude, and this really tall dude, and he told me all about this website called Casting Networks. And he said, "Oh yeah, you just join it." And he told me about this one photographer, and I just paid him $200, and he took my picture. I put my picture up there, and then like the first email I get is looking for background actors for Dark Knight Rises, and I'm like, oh boy, submit. I didn't get into it, but I just kept submitting, and all I have to do to submit is I just press. Like they give me an email and I say yes, and if they like my picture, then they'll contact me. And then finally, that I got onto a Cuba Gooding Jr. pilot called. Well, it doesn't matter. It was never picked up. It was supposed to be for Fox, but they never picked it up. They thought it was kind of a boring story. So, but that was the first time I ever did professional background acting. And then I started. And then the next thing I got was Now You See Me. And I don't think I ended up on the final product of that because I saw some guy. I thought it was me, but he had a mustache. I'm like, I don't have a mustache. But that was my very first movie. And then I just kept submitting. And I kind of realized what the game was. Like, the game is whoever submits first will most likely get the job. So I downloaded an app on my phone, and I downloaded a Thunderbird on my computer so that I would get instant notifications for an email. And what ended up happening was I ended up getting more gigs than everyone else around me. Everyone else was like, yeah, I worked 2 times a week. I'm like, really? I've been working 5 times a week. They're like, really? It's like, yeah, because I downloaded this app that tells me instantaneously about my emails. They're like, really? And then they downloaded it and they
no, don't give away your secrets.
I should not have done that. But
that's awesome.
And then I just kept doing it for 4 years, and my schedule was as versatile as I wanted it to be, because it would be like I get an email, do you want to work on this movie for this day? And I'd be like, yes. And then if they contact me back, then that means I could be a part of it. I was my roommate.
Yeah, I mean, So you've been on Law and Order, Anchorman 2. Wolf on Wall Street, all kinds of really like big name stuff. That's pretty awesome.
And the number one thing that people ask me, like, oh wow, did you get to hang out with Leonardo DiCaprio? It's like, actually no, we are not allowed to talk to any of the principal actors. If we do, we will get in big trouble. It's because, like, you know, when you have like a really big movie star, like if you have every single background actor going up to him going like, oh wow, you're so cool, I like you in this movie, then, you know, time is money. There's like a freaking like 200 crew members on site, like 100 background actors. You can't waste time at all.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I thought it was just because they were very pretentious. Oh, I'm Leonardo DiCaprio, you cannot speak with me, you peasant.
But I will say, with Martin Scorsese, they told us to not even look at him. We had to look down.
Okay, that's overboard. Come on.
Well, I asked the crew member, and he said, "Well, if you give the background actors an inch, they take a mile." I'm like, "That's honestly how it is. That is very true. You know, once you start making eye contact, you start smiling at him. Once you start smiling at them, you start to say something. Once you say something, you're in a conversation, and it's like, again." That's wasting time, wasting money. So I completely understand why they don't allow eye contact. The thing I don't understand is when I went to BronyCon, how come they don't let anyone share the elevator with Lauren Foss? Like, that is, to me, that is ridiculous, but that's just me.
Oh, well, I think I can understand some reasons why they might not want to do that. However, I don't think they're appropriate to be sharing on stream. And I shall leave it at that.
It's like even Lauren Foss is like doesn't want the brony cooties.
No, she does not.
I mean, there's a personal fundamental difference between movie stars and the Lauren Faust. She has to freaking bear the cancer of her own, you know, of her own fans that have grown up on 4chan.
It's so sad. That poor woman.
I'm sorry for changing the subject.
No,
but,
it's fine.
No, trust me, background acting is. I think it's the best job in the world, honestly. Like, it barely pays anything, but, like, who cares, you know?
Did you ever get a speaking role in any of the movies you starred in?
Let's see. You know what? I kind of did, kind of didn't. Basically, what happened was they dubbed over my voice with a Kazakhstan actor. It was a Kazakhstan movie. It was kind of funny. Like, I improvised a whole scene, and then they dubbed over my voice once they got back to, like, it was, so Kazakhstan only has one film company, and they, this one company called Salam New York. And yeah, so that was as close to as I could get to a speaking role. And then there was also this one one TV show where one of the principal actors was playing I think a waitress at a table, and she said hi, and I said hi back, and that was it. That was my only speaking role out of my whole career on TV.
Hey, well, you know what? That's pretty cool. Because think about that guy in Lord of the Rings. You know, Sildor. He only had that actor only had one word line. He's like, no. You know, when Elrond asks him to destroy the ring, he only that actor only had one line, one word, and it was no. It was spoken very deeply and very profound, but that was it. Yeah, but Isildur was a very important character. I mean, if he chose to destroy the ring, the War of the Ring would never have happened. But that's it. So your high was very important.
I've never really been, like, I've only been an important character once. They had there's this show called Monsters Inside Me where they had a reenactment where this little kid swallowed this this little battery that got lodged in his throat. It was a really sad story. I played the dad, so that was the first time I had to hold a baby, and I was like, oh, this is so confusing. But I was basically playing the dad in the reenactment. So this is Monsters Inside Me, episode 5, season 9. And that was the biggest. That's probably the only time I've actually had a role that had any significance at all to the plot.
That's actually something else we wanted to get into: raising a family, like in the fandom. So, you know, like you said, holding a baby for the first time. It just reminded me of that. Like, so you're a father. Like, that's amazing.
Got baby number 2 on the way. Second furry since ready to
when?
Go.
Wait. Oh, really? You do? I didn't even know about that.
Oh, yeah, so Damien is almost 2 years old, and after he turns 2, we are having another baby. His name's going to be Perry, and he is going to be, furry number 2, another boy.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How many months left to go?
Well, it's expected around, like, well, they said January 8th, but it's never, like, exact, so I'm guessing just expected somewhere around New Year's.
Okay.
Someone said cord suit is so cute. Thank you. I appreciate it. It was made by someone named, I think, Kimosuki.
Yeah, it is pretty cute. Oh, yeah, that's right. You can see the comments now. That's cool.
Yeah, you fact. So, on the side note, though, when you got that little gig, like, you never imagined in your lifetime you'd actually be holding your very own baby.
It's one of those things where I've always wanted to have a family, like, for a long time. And I mean, I love my family. My family became my friends, and I love the idea of having a nice big family. And I, when I first met my wife, before we were hooked up, I was like, yeah, I'd just love to have a big family sometime in the future. And she comes from a family of farmers. Like, I've been studying a lot of genealogy lately, and I figured out all of her ancestors all the way back, like, 7 generations are all farmers, farmers are, well, they have at least 10 kids each.
So is that going to be the goal?
Well, she's a bunny, so you do the math. I mean,
oh. Now we're basically throwing down furry stereotypes now, huh? Oh. Like, you and me both, like the Corden family's baby factory.
Yep, we're gonna be a little baby factory, but I mean, like with parenting, honestly, that's the hardest part is finding agreements. Because I mean, like, I love my wife, but she has her own opinions on how to parent. I have my opinions about how to parent, and coming to a compromise is the hardest part of parenting. It's not the baby rearing. It's not the changing diapers. It is absolutely. Oh gosh, someone said a naughty question. I'm not gonna read that. I'm trying to keep. I mean, I'm in front of. I mean, my baby's right next to me, so I want to try to keep it nice and. I was about to say PC, but nice and.
Oh joy! Why would you ask this in chat?
Oh my God! Did you see the latest South Park episode? Yeah, have you seen a South Park episode with the PC babies? It was the best. It was amazing.
Oh my goodness, I have not seen that.
Right. Oh, it's so good. Like someone would say something that wasn't politically correct, and the little babies would start.
Oh, speaking of politically correct, so I mean, off the air, we basically knew like what does Damien hate?
Oh, yeah, like that. He's like, don't trigger the baby. Oh yeah, his preferred pronoun is Ga.
Does Ga hate SJWs? Yes. Yeah. You are teaching him well, good sir.
I don't know. But no, actually what I was saying before the podcast is the one time when I found somebody who was an S, like I don't really run into SJWs, but the one person who identified as a SJW, I was like, okay, you know, what's the thing about SJWs? What's your goal? And they're like, to fight racists. And I'm like, wow, I guess I'm an SJW too. Fight racists, fight racists, fight. And it's like, wow, that's really simple. Cool. Let's all join the club. Sounds simple enough.
And effectively, you just Oh, he dropped out for, isn't he trying to read the comments? Oh god, you gave us a scare, man.
Oh, sorry about that. I had to go into the live chat.
Don't worry, leave that to me.
I had to drop out for a second, but
yeah, I'm good. Let me just say this. I vouch to your experience as a father, and I want to emulate you if you basically teach your kid like this. Insert image of me bowing down to you.
Well, actually, big way I've been teaching him is I would show him like educational cartoons that had like ABC and 123 and stuff. Like, I never show him something stupid like Paw Patrol. Paw Patrol. If you watch an episode of Paw Patrol, it's not educational at all. Like,
oh my god, my little cousin idiot loves parents.
There's some idiot parents out there who'll probably say, "Oh, look, it has teamwork. They're all working together as a team. That's educational." I just want to slap, 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 slap because it is. It's like it's as educational as Power Rangers, and that's how you make babies with a brain made of goo. Like you have to show them something that's educational. You know what I mean? Like that's
something to drill into their mind when their brains are young and impressionable.
Yeah, like I only show them the educational ones, and it's incredible. Like he's only at 21 months old, and he's already saying his ABCs. He's able to like almost count up to 10, and it's like. Yes, that's the right videos to show him because I love my sister and she has the most wonderful son, Billy, but Billy has memorized every character of Cars and for some reason I don't want my son to memorize every character of Cars, so I'm not going to show him Cars.
Okay. Gotta pick your priorities.
Yeah, I'm very careful. Like, I very much think Disney is not educational, so I don't want to show
him. That's a good parent right there.
I mean, come on, Disney, like, they started out with throwing innocent animals off of a cliff. You know, I don't want them to tell me how my son's morality should be. Come on.
Well, okay.
I mean, going in the direction Disney's, headed towards, I would not trust Disney at all to educate my children.
I mean, it's like with Apple. Like Steve Jobs was genius and great, and Apple was great until Steve Jobs died, and then it turned to poo. Same thing. You could argue almost the same thing with Disney. I mean, the only thing that really kept the magic alive was Alan Menken, and his songs were like, boom, that made the 90s golden era just perfect.
Yeah.
So, and then it all went downhill.
Yeah. So before we do that, though, there's a little Eric-y thing I want to ask, though, that's kind of related to what we're talking about, since you have a son. Do you think, is the fandom... I mean, there's people I know that have been very contentious about this question. Is the fandom an acceptable place for children to be around? Or should children be in the fandom?
Absolutely. Children should be the fandom. They are the future of the fandom. And I keep thinking about like all these awful experiences. Like when I went to Further Confusion and I went to their family-friendly... what do you call it? The main shopping area? I completely forgot what you call that. Dealer's Den. So I went to the Dealer's Den they had this pornographic picture and they were only covering up the nipples with like a tiny sticker. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, That's not, there's children around and this is a children friendly area. Why would you have something like that? So, I mean, I feel like there are some improvements that need to be made through the management of various conventions, but for the most part, no, like the children are the future of the fandom. People should keep their pup masks and fetish wares inside of rooms where they belong, not
that's a very good point. You know, even at Anthrocon, when I was at Anthrocon just a few months ago, I went into the West End, into the lobby, and there was like five people. They just got back from like some kind of puppy party or something. They all had like the hoods on and like the, you know, the leather and whatnot, and then right next to them there was like a little kid. I mean, he must have been maybe like eight, with like a little ears and a tail on, with like his mom. And they just walked by. They didn't really say anything, but I was just standing there, like watching this scene. And I'm like, you know, these two things probably should not be mixing together in this way. It was weird, you know. It was weird to see that. Because
I mean, I got an argument with someone about it like last week. They were saying, "Oh, it's okay. Kids could handle it." And it's like, that's not the problem. Like, sure, kids can handle watching hardcore porn. Yeah, I'm sure they'll be just fine after watching that. But you know what? The person showing them porn, that is the problem to begin with. That's the point. That's the whole point. It's the adults letting them see it. That's the real issue. You know what I mean? Like, your parents should have some control.
My thing is, I'm not really a big fan of censorship. So I think it might be better if we had cons specifically 18 plus, so that we don't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Would that make Motor City sense? FurCon. Yeah, Motor City FurCon is the only 18 plus I could think of.
Right. So yeah. More stuff like that, because a lot of the rules at other cons are very ambiguous, and you know, like I said, I'm not really a big fan of the whole censorship thing, but I also do think it's kind of strange if people in leather and pup hoods and fetish gear are walking around, you know, like 7-year-olds and their moms. That just looks not so great, you know?
The thing is, there's people who demonize the fandom like all the time. They're like, oh, they're a bunch of pervs, a bunch of weirdos, a bunch of fetishists. And people who put fetish wares next to their children, those are the ones that are enabling them. They're enabling the criticisms of the fandom. I mean, we're never going to become a mainstream accepted fandom if we don't start thinking about the welfare of children. Like, if you're going to have a family-friendly area, make it family-friendly. If you're going to have an adult-only area, great, have pornography on the walls. I don't care. But, I mean, come on. You don't force parents to hide their children's eyes. That's ridiculous.
No. But, you know, either keep it separate, in my opinion. I think that would be a pretty beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not for censorship either. I hate censorship. I think censorship's the worst. Absolutely. But
if there's gonna be kids, what happened? Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I quite agree with what you guys are hitting. So.
Oh, sorry, my screen just went black for a second. But what you said before is like, if there's kids walking around at a con and they're scrolling through like an art book and there's only like a piece of tape covering up the nipples, okay, you know, maybe a kid probably shouldn't be looking at that art book to begin with. You know, there's no need to have that happen.
Well, I mean, you assume the parents are there, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not too worried about that, you know. If the parents lets them look at an art book that's marked adults, like, oh, okay, well, you're the parent, you make the decisions.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you about. Being a parent in this fandom, and how different is it? Before you were married, which, guys, by the way, if you didn't know, Cord got married at a FurryCon and it was epic. But how is it different? Like, having, like, bringing a child to a convention, like, is it, like, how does that affect you or anything?
Well, it has been something that my wife and I have gotten into big arguments about, because what would happen is she would want to do her stuff. She'd want to go to, like, maybe one or two panels, and then I told her, all right, I'll watch the baby during those one or two panels, and then And then the whole con goes by, and then she says, I wanted you to watch him more. I'm like, I didn't know that. You should have told me. I'll watch him more. And then we get into big arguments about it. But other than that, during the con, that is when things are pretty peachy keen, peaceful, great. And, you know, I mean, like, there's one thing I'm thinking about. Like, there's I had a nephew who came to the wedding who had never seen furries before. He was 5 years old, and he said, wow, this is better than Disneyland. Like, he literally said that. So, yeah.
That's great. That's great.
It's cheaper. Yeah. It's cheaper and better. So I agree with that. Yeah.
I saw the video of it. It was great. Yeah. The video, guys, check out the video of his wedding. It's online.
I mean, Sadcore's Kitty's YouTube channel, isn't it? I mean,
just look up Bun Bun Wedding. Like, I looked up Bun Bun Wedding, and it's there. I actually, a lot of things went wrong during the wedding. Like her mom wanted to like fix her hair a bit more, and then there was a delay and everything. But I edited it so it looks super smooth.
Okay. Nice.
Is this the part where you also say, you know, where you also start advertising your channel and telling us all to subscribe?
You don't have to subscribe. You know, like, I know all those people, like everybody on YouTube's like, make sure to click the like, fave, and subscribe button and press the little bell. It's like, I hate that. I'm like, okay, if you want to do that, do it yourself. I'm not gonna demand you do something just because I need more attention. It's like, if someone subscribes to my channel, they just like my content, and that's all that matters. This is just
probably for the best, though.
YouTubers are very needy. They need you subscribe. It's like, no, come on.
Quality content matters more. Quality content and frequency.
How do I get 1,000 subscribers? Put up good content.
Make sure people know how it works and what they want.
Yeah.
And do it on a frequentish basis.
I mean, typically at the end of these podcasts, I always do that. I'm like, but I say it in like a pretty sarcastic manner, but I'm like, hey, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe to the Raiders.
Desperation. It's just desperation. It's like.
No, yeah, I know. It's desperation. Funny. I hate like in the middle. I hate when they do that, like, in the middle of videos. It's like, if it's like a top 10 list, like, oh, before we get to number one, did you know that I have a Patreon? Would you like to subscribe and hit the bell? I'm like, dude, just get to number one. I don't care. Like, now I'm not going to subscribe to you. Oh, sorry. I said, is your son offended?
Oh, my son is totally stomping on some blueberries right now.
Oh, goodness.
I'm going to have to do a major cleanup after this interview.
The joys of parenting.
Yeah.
So, nonetheless, though, I think you're going to have to make come up with a new pronoun for your second son.
Or should we call them fur-nouns? God, no, please.
I think
please
you deserve let that to not be a thing. Off the head for that.
You know, I don't know if this is offensive, but there's this one guy, and he I was asking him, like, what's your pronoun? And it's like, girl. I'm like, no, that's a noun. What's your pronoun? Her. I'm like, okay, what's your adjective? What's your favorite adverb? And he was like, I'm confused. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Well, I think it's a very sad world where people have to ask what your preferred pronouns are if they can't tell, if they don't have eyes and common sense. It's like, oh, well, what are your pronouns? Well, gee, what do you think? You know, like, is your head turned on straight?
It has to do with catering to people's emotions, and that is what politically correct is all about. And I mean, they see it as a respect issue. And I mean, I'm not going to be one of those types that goes up to somebody.
It's not a respect issue. I'm gonna say that much. It's about a thing, attention issue. Like, I demand this attention to feel good about myself because I'm inadequate in certain areas.
And that is, I mean, like, there's a lot of people whose morality system is based off of what makes you feel better or what makes them feel better. So you should always, like, that's kind of the basis of the liberal mindset is, okay, let's do what makes the most people feel the best. This is, I think, utilitarianism. I don't know the exact word for it, but that's the idea. Like, they, their basis of morality depends upon how they feel after a certain group of words are said, and that's why a
morality
lot of speech is being censored on the internet and YouTube. It's because it makes me feel uncomfortable, so I'm gonna block it.
they don't care.
There's one last area of discussion I wanted to cover. Where do you think this fandom is headed towards?
It's going to get younger and younger and younger. It's getting larger and larger. It is spreading to states that had never seen a FurCon ever before. It is like Texas already has three FurCons. Like they're spreading like wildfires and like it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. But when it comes to politics, I mean, it really ends up reflecting the normal political climate. You know what I mean? Like the normal political climate right now is.
I fully understand you, because you know the people on the left are the majority demographic in furry, and that does not help at all.
Yeah.
I mean, importantly, like I've never heard. I mean, like I've heard a lot of people say, you know, ban hate speech. That's not protected speech, and that's that's not true.
Well, it is protected speech. Yes, it is.
But I haven't heard a liberal say they're pro censorship, which is good. That's a really good thing to hear, because I believe in the free exchange of ideas, and I think what's going on is a lot of people, they hear speech that makes them feel uncomfortable, so they misconstrue it as hate speech. Like, I mean, like if you hear Ben Shapiro, he might make a lot of people very uncomfortable, but he's saying an awful lot of facts and figures, which is a little concerning. If facts and figures make you uncomfortable, then maybe there's something wrong with you as opposed to the person stating that, you know? Does that make sense?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose so.
Now, the thing about furry is, like, it is the political divide that's basically going to cause it to crash especially in light of certain events and characters.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. I've got a baby talking here. He's very cute right now.
Ah, it's all right. I mean, you'd at least agree that there's a certain level of politicization and certain loudmouth characters that are causing this to split a bit. So, I mean,
yes, but remember, those are the 1%. Like the 1%, there's always the 1% of people who are very vocal. Those are the ones you hear about in the news, in all of the posts on Facebook. They're all complaining about the 1%, and then the 99%, which are just kind of normal, everyday, average dudes. They're or dudettes or whatever. But you know what I mean. Like there is. Most people are pretty peaceful, moderate, easygoing, and those are the ones that no one ever writes news stories or updates about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, I mean, like, if people say, "Oh my God, you know, furries are getting crazier and crazier and ruder and ruder," it's like, not really. It's just that our communication has gotten better. We've been able to look at the people who are the 1% who are causing all the trouble and mixing the pot and being able to show them off more and more, you know what I mean? But I think ultimately it's just communications getting heightened. More people are communicating in social networks. I don't think people are going crazier. It's just the 1%, they're just getting louder and louder, and they'll continue getting louder and louder. And
I mean,
you're going to run into extremists who try to blind themselves and become trans blind.
Majority of furries just don't care about this mess though.
Yeah, and yet, you know, you did bring up a good point about how the fandom is spreading, and a lot of the members are getting younger and younger. Because, like, a few years ago, when I started going to cons, I didn't really see too many kids under the age of, like, 18. Like, I really didn't see it that much, especially, like, at FAU and, like, the New Year's Furry Ball, you know, all those places that I would go to. But it wasn't really up until, like, I don't know, 2 years ago when I really started to, well, okay, Anthrocon is different, but, like, even at like a lot of the smaller cons, like there's a lot more kids just getting into it. I guess they feel comfortable and like they bring their parents along, which I thought was really weird, especially if their parents aren't furries. But it's really cool because like you're in a position where you've been in the fandom for so long and you have your own kids and you're bringing them to cons. And you're somehow, I mean, are you like making it work? Like it seems like you are.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like it's like just look at like we got a lot of videos up with Damien interacting with the fursuiters, and it's the cutest thing ever. I mean, sure, he's never gonna remember it, but it's the cutest thing ever, honestly.
Well, you know, he could always look back on the videos and be like, oh, wow, that's cool. I mean, hey, I remember when I was like 2 years old. I do remember this. I had Barney the dinosaur, well, a guy in a Barney costume, at my birthday party. And it was the best thing in the world. And I have pictures of it.
I have this memory when I was in first grade and I was at Chuck E. Cheese, and I remember the kids attacking Chuck E. Cheese, pulling on his tail, kicking him. I was like,
oh,
in the back of
God.
My mind, I'm like, oh my God, I'm glad I'm not that mouse right now.
Yeah, right. I would hate to be that guy. Oh, goodness.
I experienced the exact same thing. I was at the Botanical Gardens in Brooklyn in fursuit. Oh, I was attacked by those kids. Attacked. It was brutal.
Oh, God. Oh, and you were also in that, I think this was Vancouver, when a bunch of the Syrian refugees, met you.
Oh, God, no. What do you mean, oh, God, no? It was cute.
I mean, that's...
I'm just saying, that was another instance of, I would say, culture shock. Can you imagine, like, coming from a war-torn country, and the first thing you see is guys dressed up in, like, giant cartoon animal suits? Like, that would be the weirdest thing to me. If I was, like, 7 or something, and I came from, like, you know, Syria or Iraq, and I was like, what the heck? What is happening in America?
So what you didn't see... What you didn't see on the video was there was this one kind of long hallway on the other end of the Vancouver, and there was a bunch of kids, and then like we would start walking towards the kids, and then they would sprint away and like hide behind their parents, and then they would sprint away, and then after about 5 minutes,
they should have showed that.
Yeah, that was like really early on. Like at some point, like someone noticed, like, hey, look, it looks like they're. The kids and the fursuiters are playing. Let's take out a camera. But at first they were for the first 5 minutes they were afraid of us and they were running away. And then suddenly they were grabbing our hands and jumping up and down and everyone was having fun.
Wow! All right.
Hey, it's better than being murdered by ISIS, right? I mean, like...
it's yeah, it's that's something I can concede definitely.
I mean, the parents, like, they appear to be kind of expressionless. They were kind of just chillaxing. Like, they were just sort of, they were chillaxing, but they didn't seem, like, when I looked at them, they didn't seem to be, like, they were just kind of like, you know, they're like, just watching their kids and seeing what was going on, observing. Like, they were going through the real culture shock, but in a weird way, the kids seemed like they were right at home.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. At this stage, I just like to open up the line to questions and answers that you may ask us, or you can ask us our guest called Kitty. You can feel free to post them up in the live comments and we'll read them, or otherwise, you know.
Oh yes, and before we do that, I would just like to mention a nice shout out to our new channel that we just got yesterday, called Furry Raiders Gaming. On that channel, which will be streaming on Saturdays, it's going to be talking about a lot of issues in the gaming community, and as well as live streams of playing games and whatnot. So if you're into that, please do check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I've not exactly gotten all the specifics, and even, I mean, that stuff is outside of my jurisdiction, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's still very, very new, but it's launching right now, so
because of course there's not enough Let's Plays out there. Oh.
Hey, you know,
I mean,
what?
Streaming's a big way of, you know,
it a lot of people like that stuff, and it's really
oversaturating the market. Oops,
come on. It's cool. All right.
I'm not hating. You, I know there are people who enjoy that. I don't, but that's okay. That's okay. Keep up the good work. I'm sure it's really dope.
All right. Well, hopefully it will be. Didn't really start.
Everyone
yet,
go watch it.
Well, yeah, right. Shameless plug, like, comment, and subscribe.
Yeah. All right. I got one little question. Can I smack candy corn for you, Jolton? No, I can do that myself.
What? Why? What?
Anubis Don asked that. Oh, God.
Ah, Anubis Don, what'd I do? Who hurt you? So does anybody have any questions for Cord or anything about that?
I mean, it's, you know, it's oddly enough, this past couple of months have been very slow for every one of us, but even for the wider community, I think. I actually wanted to ask Cord, has the furry community kind of slowed down a little bit in terms of online activity on your end?
Not really, no. It's getting bigger than ever, especially when we were catching people doing illegal stuff and then we ostracize them and tell them to kill themselves. Oh, no, that is filling up my feed to the max, multiple people.
Yeah, that one was a whole another can of worms.
Oh yeah,
I was genuinely asking like if it's like small talk and like everyday appearances in chats like these, because I feel like I don't know if it's just me or I feel like are some people just burning out on furry or something.
Well, no, there's absolutely people who just sort of leave the fandom because they're like they're sick of the politics, or maybe they meet one person who takes advantage of them financially, or maybe they meet somebody who is a jerk and they're like, oh, well, this one person's a jerk, so I guess the group that he's a part of is a jerk. And no, I've seen people come and leave and come and go, and then they're like, I'm never going to join this group again. And the next week they're updating, hey, I just want to say I'm back. I was going through a dark time. So yeah, I mean, it's
there will always be
a revolving door.
Yeah, there's a lot of memes about that. Like, one does not simply leave the furry fandom. And like, they really... Oh, all right. So we got a question here from Ice Kitsune. Oh, geez. Did Cord ever have to say, oy vey, in the school play?
I was in the chorus. Chorus never gets lines.
Oh, you didn't get to say oy vey? That would have been great.
No oy veys. Okay. It was funny. Like, we had rap songs, though. Like, imagine a bunch of little Jewish kids saying rap songs in the mid-90s. It was very funny.
Yo, I'm selling gefilte fish on the corner. If you want to buy some, it'll be $1.
I have never, for the record, ever listened to any of that stuff or like legitimate Hebrew rap. And
I just made that up right now. I don't know.
I mean, maybe my interest in it maybe peaked because of it, but...
If that's a thing, that's really funny.
Yeah. It was. It was so funny. Like,
oh my goodness.
Who made a children's theater show and thought, all right, let's add rap. Jewish kids rapping. Yeah, that'll work out great. And it did. It was strangely catchy. Like, I'm very tempted to actually post the musical on YouTube. It's a very tempting because I have the video. It's just.
Oh, yeah.
It's wacky.
That's pretty funny.
Right. Next question. Godric, who runs the gaming chat, says, what is Cord's favorite season of the year?
My favorite season has always been... Well, let's see. You know what? My genes are mostly from Russia, so this is a true story. I went outside several times from the New York City apartment while it was 27 degrees, and I had nothing but shorts and a t-shirt on, and I was just sort of walking up and like to go pay my rent, walked 5, 6, 7 blocks, and I felt nothing. So I'll have to say winter, because I'm just like, cold doesn't bother me.
Oh my goodness. Well, how do you deal with being so hot, like in a fursuit, like on stage with the lights on you and like in a full body digigrade, everything dancing around and actually like winning and whatnot? Like, damn,
I get drenched. I get drenched.
My goodness. Okay, well.
Just one little other question I can deal with. Diogo Ferreira asks, how did searching for furry lead me here? I don't know. Didn't you type the first thing that like furry on the YouTube search bar? This is basically a stream that's happening now. Hey,
and it is the name. I mean, Furry Raiders. It's furry. You know, that's like half the name right there.
I put furry on the tags for search.
Oh, and that too. Hey, awesome.
But other than that, though, I think it's kind of all we've basically got all the time that we've got.
Lamb said the furry fandom is dying and is irrelevant now. Oh,
I mean, here's the thing that I want to inject in with this. I'm not going to say it's demographically dead because of the growth rate and all that. I'm rather going to say that it's the heart and soul of the fandom is dying. So on that front, I can agree. Is it irrelevant? It's basically died down from this limelight, but it's just that, you know, news outlets just prop it up from time to time. So.
Oh, and Ice Kitsune, how much vodka does Cord drink? Zero. I don't drink any alcohol. I don't like the taste, and yeah, I don't drink.
Wow. Shameful Russian.
I mean, you're not, Cord, you already know you're not the only Russian in the room right now.
Yes, I am.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. You know, I've been doing my genealogy stuff, and everything stops at 1850 when, you know, Hitler destroyed all of the Jewish records, and it's like, oh, thanks a lot, Hitler. God.
Oh, goodness. Oh, can I hear Candy Corn say something in Russian to Cord Kitty? Sure. Я люблю меня тюб, which means, I love you, my friend.
Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam.
One last question. Ice Kitsune asks, Cord, does your family rush B?
Does my family rush B? What does that mean?
You're not really much into games, are you, Cord?
Not at all. I mean, like, I'm good at Tetris.
But not like the modern stuff, like the, you know, the popular video games, the Counter-Strikes that Rush B came from, that Russian players usually say out loud.
Nope.
I see. So that's a dead ringer note. Anyway, that's pretty much most of the time we have for Cord. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I had a lot of fun, and this was ridiculously easy to set up. I mean, I'm very used to going like, okay, where are my headphones? Where's my microphone? Okay, I got to test my microphone. Oh no, it's the wrong input. Oh no, it's the wrong output, and it's chaos. But no, this is ridiculously simple. Holding my phone, and now I'm on a podcast. Like, wow.
Jeez, yeah, really. And you sound great too. I mean, you're coming in clear. Everything's working out great.
Oh, why, thank you.
I mean, this. Oh, what? It, who is this, that? This actually went quite well for all concerned.
That's me doing my radio voice. Like, hey, hey, how you doing, guys? Hey, yo.
Oh my.
So, Cord, have you got any little final words to say?
Absolutely. My final words to say are. Everyone, if you disagree with someone, then listen to them even more. And that's what I want to say. Listen to people who you disagree with. That's how I learned to really be understanding of everyone else around me. And I mean, I grew up in a liberal democratic family. And so what did I do? I only listened to conservatives. And that helped me sort of understand the world a lot better. Because it's like, so again, listen to people you disagree with.
That's a good sentiment to have that we wish we'd more in the world.
Yeah, and that's a great point.
Like, yeah. my dad actually, like, was concerned about all the conservative radio I was listening to, so he bought me a book by Alan Combs, and I never touched it.
Oh. No, I haven't touched a lot of stuff that I bought. But that's an aside, though. Just one last thing before we do wrap up. Are you willing to divulge any of your what your future plans are? Like,
I'm not going to be going to any furry con for well over a year. I'm going to be stuck inside my house with two babies for a very long time. Yep, that's my future plans.
But, all right. Well,
yeah,
you got to do that parenting thing.
I mean, it's not yet though. But I mean, I was just also about to say, you know, you're basically like, what, you stay-at-home dad at the moment?
Yep, full-time.
Ah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, I think it's time. This is all the time we've got for the moment. Thanks to everyone who listened. I hope you had fun, and you enjoyed the show. And we'll see you all, well, minus Cord. I mean, you'd be back here, like, maybe sometime in the future. Maybe if you're up for it.
Yep, that sounds good. Yeah.
Great. It'd be awesome to have you on again.
Yeah, we'll just give you, like, you know, give us a ring, and maybe one day in the future we'll basically work something out.
That sounds right. I'm very much, I actually tried to get on last week's show and the week before that. I think I heard there was a two, and I was like, oh, two.
Yeah, we had Janisius on the show too, like, one time.
Yeah.
And he, yeah, like, Okay, one. I mean, we're all amenable to having you guys on again.
Yeah, I mean, I respect anyone who's a comedian. Comedians are the best people.
Right on.
Yeah. So with that, we all bid you farewell. Until next time.
Until next time. Absolutely.
All right. Bye.
All right. Gaga.